The headlines, three Israelis are killed in a shooting attack in the occupied West Bank as tensions remain high over the regime's aggression against Al-Aqsa Mosque. The Israeli regime's warplanes carry out airstrikes on several positions in the besieged Gaza Strip and Lebanon. And also, China has imposed sanctions against two American institutions and individuals over a visit by Taiwan's president to the U.S. Hello and welcome everybody here in the Iranian capital, Tehran. This is World News. Our top story for this half hour, Israeli forces have once again attacked Palestinian worshippers at Al-Aqsa Mosque in the occupied West Bank. Troops stormed the holy site early on Friday. That was the latest in a series of attacks by the Israeli forces against Palestinians at Al-Aqsa this week. The first one took place early on Wednesday, leaving hundreds of Palestinians injured. Hundreds more were arrested as well. Al-Aqsa Mosque is the third holiest site in the Islamic world. The Israeli aggression against the mosque has drawn widespread condemnation. Palestinian resistance movement Hamas says the aggression will not go unanswered. It says the movement, along with the Palestinian people, will continue to defend Al-Aqsa. Jordanians have taken to the streets to denounce Israeli attacks on Al-Aqsa Mosque and show solidarity with Palestinians. Protesters in the capital Amman also backed resistance as the only way to liberate Palestinian land. They denounced any relations with Tel Aviv, urging Amman to withdraw from the so-called peace treaty signed with the Israeli regime back in 1994. The protesters also called on their government to expel the Israeli ambassador and close the regime's embassy. Three Israeli settlers have been killed in a shooting in the occupied West Bank. Two died on the spot, while the other succumbed to her injuries in hospital. The incident happened near the settlement of Hamra. Palestinian resistance groups have hailed it as a natural response to Israel's crimes and its aggression against Al-Aqsa Mosque. Our correspondent in Ramallah, Mona Kandil, has the details.
The Israeli military declared that they found a vehicle crashed in the Jordan Valley. First of all, they thought it was an accident. But then they said there were gunshots at the vehicle. The Israeli military launched a manhunt in search for those who carried out the operation, because the Israelis say they think that at least two Palestinians were in their vehicle and carried out this shooting. Military checkpoints were set in the Jordan Valley at the entrances to Nablus area and northern the occupied West Bank, as well as at the entrances to the city of Jericho, also known as Ariha. Those who carried out the operation could driven towards Jericho. So the search and the manhunt is going on. Palestinian resistance groups immediately praised this operation, saying that it would be a natural response to the non-stop aggression against the Palestinians. Hamas movement said it's a natural response to the aggression and the attack on the Al-Aqsa Mosque and Palestinian worshippers in the last few days during the holy month of Ramadan, as well as the attacks on the Gaza Strip and Lebanon as well.
Israel has carried out airstrikes in the besieged Gaza Strip and Lebanon. It claims that the strikes targeted positions belonging to Palestinian resistance movement Hamas in both territories. Loud blasts rocked different areas of the Gaza Strip on Friday night. No casualties were reported. Palestinians fired salvos of rockets in response. Hamas has reacted, saying Israel is fully responsible for the consequences of its aggression against Gaza. To Lebanon, the Israeli military also launched air raids in the south of the country. They hit areas near the city of Tyre, with the Israeli regime saying that it struck Hamas positions. Tel Aviv says its attacks on both Gaza and Lebanon were in response to earlier rockets fired from those regions. Two casualties were caused by the Israeli strikes in Lebanon. Well, as our correspondent Mariam Sully reports from the town of Tyre, that the Israeli strikes hit civilian areas in Lebanon.
Just to see the type of these strikes that we saw in Lebanon, the Israeli army has claimed that it has targeted areas that are posts for or Hamas targets. What we saw the first time was basically banana trees and fresh water supplies. What we're seeing right now here, this is the second target, which is basically a barnyard, and the target mainly hit this small barn, which shows that, of course, we had a very small rocket, not an airplane rocket, not an Air Force rocket, perhaps a reconnaissance plane or a drone that launched this small rocket. It's not very large in size. We don't see a lot of casualties. This barn is still intact, actually. Perhaps a little bit of some of its ceiling has been blown away. We saw also some of the livestock in this area lose their life. We have around maybe some sheep and lamb, but absolutely no human casualties. And even this place is still intact. And as the rooster crows, this, of course, bears witness to the fact that this is not a post and not an area for Hamas. This is definitely not a Hamas target. So basically what the Israelis are trying to sell to their populace and their people are mainly so far just baseless lies.
Well, the Iranian and Saudi foreign ministers have signed an agreement to formally restore relations and start arrangements to reopening embassies and consulates. The top diplomats also agreed to improve security and economic cooperation between Tehran and Riyadh. Prince Faisal bin Farhan Al Saud and Hossein Amir Abdullahian signed the joint statement following talks in the Chinese capital, Beijing.
Iran and Saudi Arabia have taken a giant step toward closer cooperation. The foreign ministers of Iran and Saudi Arabia have held a meeting in the Chinese capital, Beijing, to give a boost to Riyadh-Tehran rapprochement efforts. Prince Faisal bin Farhan Al Saud and Hossein Amir Abdullahian met for the first time since the two countries signed a China-brokered deal on the resumption of relations back in May. The two foreign ministers signed a joint statement regarding their bilateral ties. The statement says that Iran and Saudi Arabia will move toward restoring full ties. Consulate generals will also issue visas to nationals from the two countries, and the kingdom will ease the process for Umrah and Hajj pilgrimages. Riyadh and Tehran have also agreed to improve security and economic cooperation. Two sides also agreed to develop cooperation in any field that can ensure the security and stability of the region, as well as the interests of its nations. Furthermore, Amir Abdullahian and Faisal bin Farhan underscored the importance of dialogue on ways to bolster bilateral relations and activate a security cooperation agreement.
We saw very positive talks, very constructive negotiations between the two sides. Accordingly, the two sides stressed that, actually they said that they have consensus on that, and they said that from today they resume their official ties. From today, then they decided to exchange some delegations between the two countries in the as soon as possible, and we will see that in the coming days. Actually, such developments will take place. Actually, technical teams will be present, will visit the capitals of both countries, and more talks will be held, and the embassies of both countries will be reopened soon.
As well as a general cooperation deal in the fields of economy, trade, investment, technology, science, culture, sports, and youth. Given the existing natural resources and economic capabilities that can be used to ensure the common interests of the two brotherly nations, the two sides agreed to increase meetings and consultations to further realize the positive prospects in bilateral relations.
Well, the kingdom will now ease the process for Umrah and Hajj pilgrimages. A meeting between the top Saudi and Iranian diplomats is the first since the two countries signed a China-brokered deal on the resumption of ties back in March. It's believed that the restoration of full diplomatic ties between the two nations will impact geopolitical power equations in the West Asia region and beyond.
On March 10, after several days of intensive negotiations hosted by China, Iran, and Saudi Arabia, they agreed to resume their diplomatic relations and reopen their embassies and diplomatic missions after 7 years of estrangement. That agreement followed intensive negotiations between the Secretary of Iran's Supreme National Security Council, Ali Shamkhani, and his Saudi counterpart in Beijing. The statement was inked by Shamkhani, Musaid al-Eban, Saudi Arabia's National Security Advisor, and Wang Yi, the Director of the Office of the Central Foreign Affairs Commission of the Chinese Communist Party. Saudi Arabia severed diplomatic relations with Iran back in January 2016. Tension-easing talks between Iran and Saudi Arabia kick-started in April 2021 and gradually gathered momentum after the Raisi-led cabinet assumed a charge later that year.
Since day one, after winning the election, the Iranian president stressed that he means to improve foreign trade, especially with the neighboring states. So improving neighborly ties has been a major agenda for President Raisi's government. And this is not possible unless you de-escalate the tensions with Saudi Arabia. That's why in his first press conference, even before his inauguration, he said that he was ready to reopen embassies in Tehran and Riyadh on the same day.
The talks and the resumption of ties between the two neighbors dealt a heavy blow to the Israeli premier Benjamin Netanyahu's project to continue the so-called normalizations, destabilize the region, and form a regional alliance against Iran. Shamkhani's successful trips to China, which was followed by trips to the UAE and Iraq, sent Iran's enemies into a fizzy, as they feared they would prove to be a game-changer in the region. The restoration of ties between the two countries comes amid major shifts in the power dynamic of the region. Furthermore, China's role in the breakthrough shook up dynamics in West Asia, where the U.S. has for decades been the main mediator.
China plays a very important role in the process of reconciliation in the Middle East region. Saudi Arabia and Iran achieved reconciliation and bilateral relations under the mediation of China and Beijing and are further advancing the process of reconciliation. It proves that both sides felt comfortable in Beijing. As we know, China has always upheld fairness and justice in promoting peace talks. It has neither taken any side nor been partial in mediation. Therefore, concerning issues related to Saudi-Iran relations, China has always emphasized the common points in the interest of the two countries and then promoted peace talks, accommodated the concerns of all parties, and provided great comfort for the two countries.
China has slapped sanctions on two American entities and their directors after the Taiwanese president met U.S. House Speaker in California. The sanctions target the Hudson Institute think tank and the Reagan Library, as well as four persons with top positions there. China's foreign ministry says the two institutions provided Taiwan's President Tsai Ing-wen with a forum to engage in separatist activities in the U.S. The sanctions prevent Chinese organizations from conducting transactions and cooperating with the two targeted entities. The blacklisted individuals are also subjected to financial sanctions and other restrictive measures. Tsai Ing-wen sat with U.S. House Speaker Kevin McCarthy on Wednesday at the Reagan Library. The meeting took place despite warnings from China, which considers Taiwan as part of its territory. The 30th International Exhibition of the Holy Quran is underway in Tehran. Books, works of art, and in short, anything that is in any way related to the Holy Quran is on display, with more than 20 artists from around the world participating. Yisumi Shahmati tells us more.
I read you, a motto to promote not just reciting the Holy Quran regularly, but also reading and understanding its verses with the aim of using its detailed guidance and implementing its teachings in every aspect of our lives. This is the motto of the 30th Tehran International Quran Exhibition that is currently underway in the Iranian capital and will be running until April 15. Paintings depicting verses and teachings of the Holy Quran, as well as calligraphy and illumination artworks, are on display at this annual exhibition, which is held every year in Tehran during the holy month of Ramadan. Artists from 21 countries are here to present their works and hold workshops. Some rare manuscripts and books related to the Holy Quran, including interpretations of the Holy Book, are also showcased. Publishers from several countries have brought their newly printed copies of the Holy Quran as well.
Most of our works are related to lessons from the Holy Quran by Hujjatul Islam Qaraati. This year, we managed to publish his simplified version of the translation of the Holy Quran, an easy-to-read and understand copy, which is an excellent choice for anyone who wants to understand the Holy Quran.
Tehran's International Quran Exhibition is the most significant exhibition of its kind in the Muslim world. World-renowned Quran reciters usually participate, and recently it has also gained a reputation for offering the latest version of Quran AI apps and electronic devices, including Quran reading pens.
We have very special customers, and our products appeal to a wide range of people. We usually receive a lot of orders from Muslim countries, including Persian Gulf littoral states. Our main product is this electronic reading pen that can recite verses of the Holy Quran. It comes with a memory stick and can hear recitations from more than a dozen of the world's best reciters.
As always, the exhibition will be hosting several Quranic competitions. Researchers and university professors have also been invited to talk about the Holy Quran and its teachings. A series of international webinars have also been scheduled to discuss the latest studies on the Holy Quran and related topics, accessible to all of those who cannot attend.
The 30th International Quran Exhibition opened on April the 1st with the aim of promoting the Holy Quran and Quranic teachings. Yusuf Ahmadi, Tehran.
And that brings us to an end here on this edition of World News. Do stay tuned, though. Bye.
Follow us on social media to stay up to date on the latest global developments. You can keep in touch with us by following us on Twitter at twitter.com/ParsTodayEN. You can also follow IRIB English Radio on Instagram via instagram.com/ParsTodayEnglish.
In the limelight.
In Britain, low-income households will spend on average £200 more on bills than last year, the consumer body Which has warned. We take a look at the world media's coverage of this story. Please stay with us. The British newspaper The Guardian has covered the story and tells us more. Some of the United Kingdom's least well-off households could be left more than £200 worse off on their energy bills this year because of reduced government support, the consumer body Which has warned. Joining calls made by other campaigners, It said the government urgently needed to introduce a social tariff for gas and electricity to protect the most financially vulnerable. Consumers have been spared an increase to their energy costs equivalent to £500 on the typical annual bill originally planned to come in from 1st of April until a government U-turn. However, a separate scheme that provided all households with a £400 discount, giving them £66 or £67 off their energy bills every month from October of 2022 through to March of 2023 inclusive, has just come to an end. Which said that even with the government's decision to keep the energy price guarantee at £2,500 for an average household until July, rather than putting it up to £3,000, millions of low-income consumers would still face higher energy bills this financial year. While analysts have predicted that annual energy bills could typically fall to about £2,000 from this summer, consumers will still be paying almost double what they were paying before the energy crisis began, which predicted that these factors combined will mean the poorest 10% of households in Britain will have to spend an average of £209 more on energy this financial year compared to last year. It said the average low-income consumer used less energy than those on higher incomes, so they would not benefit as much from the anticipated falls in energy prices, but would still feel the full loss of the £400 of additional government support. Higher costs could be particularly difficult to manage for prepayment meter users, many of whom are on low incomes, because unlike direct debit customers, they cannot spread their costs across the whole year and so would see a spike in costs during the cold winter months. Which said ministers had announced the cost of living payments to those on qualifying benefits would continue, but added, this will leave low-income households who are struggling to make ends meet but do not qualify for benefits out in the cold. A properly targeted social tariff, a discounted energy rate for those most in need, was desperately needed, it added. Calls for a social tariff have been growing louder, with Citizens Advice and the consumer champion Martin Lewis among those increasing pressure on the British government over the issue. A recent study suggested such a tariff could save 12 million households on the lowest income an average of £381 a year, and up to £1,500 in some cases. The government has announced a package of cost of living support, including a £900 cash boost for more than 8 million eligible means-tested benefit claimants, including people on universal credit, pension credit and tax credits, to be paid into bank accounts in 3 instalments between this spring and spring of 2024. Site irishnews.com has also covered this story and tells us more. Consumer groups have called for an energy social tariff in the form of cash payments for the poorest households ahead of what they warn could be a decade of high bills. Citizens Advice said payments of up to £1,500 are now an essential long-term solution for millions of fuel-poor households, both now and during what could be a decade of record prices. The call for targeted financial support by next year has the backing of a coalition of consumer and energy bodies, including Martin Lewis and Energy UK, and is part of a new report commissioned by Citizens Advice, following 9 months of consultation with industry and the public. The report recommends cash payments according to individual household need, delivered through a combination of HMRC data on household incomes and energy supplier knowledge of how much electricity and gas is used to show a picture of who needs help and by how much. More than 12 million British households on the lowest income would qualify for support, and the average qualifying household would see their energy bill reduced by £381, with some getting up to £1,500, according to the report's analysis. Currently, households are spending more than twice as much on energy compared with 18 months ago, regardless of whether the government's energy price guarantee remains at £2,500, as is widely expected, rather than rises to the previously announced £3,000 from April. If the energy price guarantee remains at £2,500, 10 million households will face crisis-level energy costs, with more than 10% of their income after housing costs going to energy, a key indicator of fuel poverty, the charity said. If the energy price guarantee increases to £3,000, that figure rises to 12 million households, it warned. People on the lowest income will be hit much harder, with energy make up more than half of their total household income after housing costs in either scenario, up from 34% in 2019. Citizens Advice said it helped 50% more people with energy issues last year than the year before, and more than double that of 2020. Last year, it saw more people who could not afford to top up their prepayment meter than in the previous 10 years combined. The charity warned energy prices are not expected to return to pre-pandemic levels for the next decade. The report also calls for a national programme of loft and cavity wall installation for all households in fuel poverty. Citizens Advice Chief Executive Dame Claire Moriarty said energy affordability is a long-term problem that needs a long-term solution. A social tariff protects millions of people from spending excessive amounts on their energy bills. High energy costs have left too many people choosing between heating and eating. Uncertainty over future high prices only adds to the stress and worry felt in households across the country. This policy helps make energy bills more affordable in the years ahead and supports the shift to warmer, safer homes that are ready for the net zero transition.
ربنا
Supplication is the wealth of the believer and the bridge by which one achieves proximity to Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, the Exalted.
A path to salvation, a way to connect the two worlds. On the program, Bridge.
You're listening to the program Bridge on RIB English Radio with Sheikh Al-Musavi.
A'udhu billahi min ash-shaytan ar-rajim. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Brothers and sisters, dear listeners, assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh, and welcome to IRIB English Radio, and you are listening to the program Bridge. We are looking at supplication number 8 of Al-Sahif al-Sajjadiyya for Al-Imam Ali ibn Hussein Zainul Abidin. Imam Sajjad Salamullah alayhi says, O Allah, I seek refuge in you from Mubahatul Mukthirin, trying to compete with the rich. Now, we said and we've been saying that we don't need to compete with the rich. We need to be generous in this month and to give. So now we have three things. We have Imam Sajjad Salamullah alayhi. We have generosity. And tonight and today, we have the birthday of one of the most generous people that walked this earth. And that is our second Imam, Imam Al-Hasan Al-Mujtaba alayhi salam. Our second Imam alayhi salam was known in generosity. that there would be no one that could match his generosity. He gave everything that he had for the sake of Allah twice. Like, he completely gave whatever he has in the sake of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. Something that I have never ever heard anyone has done before. Even our other imams. Not to say that they are not generous, but no one went to the extent of Imam al-Hasan al-Mujtaba alayhi salam. If that tells me anything, it tells me the benefits and the rewards that Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala has gave and put in charity. So, 15th of the month of Ramadan is the birthday of our master, second master, Imam al-Hasan al-Mujtaba alayhi salamullah. So we send our congratulations to the entire Muslim Ummah. Let us take a short break and then we will continue.
A path to salvation. A way to connect the two worlds.
The bridge between Allah and His creation.
A bridge that is meant to take us to Allah, to take us to His proximity. A bridge that is in the form of dua and supplication.
In this program, we offer commentary on the du'as of As-Sahifatu Sajjadiyah of Imam Sajjad alayhi salatu wasalam.
The famous book of litanies, the Psalms of Islam.
Bridge.
Rabbana.
Welcome back, brothers and sisters, and you are listening to the program Bridge. So we were saying that it is the birthday of Imam al-Hasan al-Mujtaba alayhi salam, and he was known to be Karimu Ahl al-Bayt, the most generous out of the household. Now, to make a person generous, for him to be generous, is that he needs to understand the benefits of generosity. And the benefits of giving. Because if I don't understand how good something is, my motivation to it will be a lot less. Me trying to do it would be, you know, almost impossible. But the more I tell you about something and the benefits of it and how good it is, the more you'll be motivated to do. So when it comes to sadaqah and charity, we have so much ahadith. We have so much narration, right, that motivates me and you to give. Now, for Imam al-Hasan al-Mujtaba alayhi salamullah, to give everything that he had, and he comes absolutely clean. It says in the narration, he would even give his slippers. So I'm assuming the only thing that was left is his clothes that he was wearing. Besides that, everything was given away. It's because he can see the reward that Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala would give in return for what he gives. He thought that there is nothing more better and more valuable in the reward system than sadaqah. And actually it is. Because the Quran says, and this is very important and also very interesting, when a person dies, he will ask Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala to bring him back to life. So this is a process that me and you will go through. The person says, "Oh Allah, arju'uni, bring me back." Why? Why do you want to go? لِأَصَّدَّقَ, so I can give charity. وَأَكُونَ مِنَ الْمُحْسِنِينَ, and I be among the good doers. So sadaqah, a person comes back to life. He doesn't say, so I can fast, so I can pray, so I can do tasbih, so I can go to hajj. No, no, no. He says, bring me back. لِأَصَّدَّقَ, so I can give charity. So that person who died and he crossed over, he saw that there is nothing more rewarding in the system of reward than sadaqah. So Imam Hasan al-Mujtaba alayhi salam says, I am the generous. So he gave everything. Me and you, let us use the opportunity of this holy month and this holy day and this the birth of our generous Imam and to give to others who are in need, in the name of the Imam himself. Let us take a short break, and then we will continue.
Rabbana, Rabbana,
You're listening to the program Bridge on IRIB English Radio.
Welcome back, brothers and sisters, and you are listening to the program Bridge. So we were saying that sadaqah and giving charity, being generous in the month of Ramadan is the best time, right? So Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala dedicated times for everything. So our prayers, they have designated time. Hajj has designated time. Fasting has designated time. But when it comes to charity, for example, it also has designated time. And the best designated time for sadaqah, even though throughout the day sadaqah has specific places to pay and throughout the year, but the best times designated for sadaqah, for charity, for generosity, is in fact in the month of Ramadan. And Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala says, وَمَنْ يُوقَ شُحَّ نَفْسِهِ فَأُولَٰئِكَ هُمُ الْمُفْلِحُونَ. Those who can prevent themselves from stinginess, those are the successful ones. So in this month, we look at into ourselves. We reevaluate ourselves. And we take what we have and we try to help other people. Obviously, I'm not saying give all your money and be like Imam Hassan al-Mujtaba if you want. By all means, the door is open. But at least give something back to those who are in need. Because what you have is from Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. If you want Allah to increase it and make it 100-folds, then give to the people that need. Give charity. Give sadaqah. Make generosity a trait that you live by, that people know you by. They will say, this guy is generous. Inshallah, we will leave it here and we will continue in other episodes. So until then, stay with us. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
That was Sheikh Al-Musawi in the program Bridge on IRIB English Radio.
Hargiz nagirat to abad Aqa kasi jaye to ray هرگز مخواد از کف دهن عشق و تولای تو را
یا
You have just listened to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily round the clock for listeners across the globe. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran can be heard via the internet, shortwave, FM, and satellite. Our listeners in the Indian subcontinent can listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave 25 meters, 11,645 kilohertz, every day from 1520 to 1620 UTC. Also, our listeners in Europe can tune in to the English service of the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave 31 meters, 9,855 kilohertz, and in Southern Africa via shortwave 31 meters, 9,835 kilohertz every day from 1920 to 2020 UTC. Our listeners in Tehran can also listen to our programs via FM 91.5 megahertz. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on IranSat or BAT 5 and Intelsat 39 and via the internet. Our internet address is parstoday.ir/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program PO Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about audio quality and other means. Thank you. In the limelight.
In Britain, more than 12,000 children are enduring dangerous waits for more than a year for NHS help, amid warnings that the lockdown generation is being left behind in efforts to clear backlogs. We take a look at the British media's coverage of this story. Please stay with us. British newsletter The Guardian has covered the story and tells us more. Thousands of children experiencing unacceptable long waits for NHS treatment face a lifelong impact on their health. A senior doctor has warned as shocking figures reveal that nearly 15,000 paediatric operations were cancelled over the last year. Dr. Camilla Kingdon, president of the Royal College of Paediatrics and Child Health, said the mounting treatment backlog in England risks serious and devastating physical and mental consequences for children and their families. She sounded the alarm as data obtained under Freedom of Information laws by the Liberal Democrats showed that a record high of 14,628 children's operations were postponed in 2022, up from 11,870 the year before, and the highest in 5 years of data examined. Some children have now waited several years for surgery, according to the new data. The figures emerged as the National Health Service braced itself for yet more disruption, with thousands of junior doctors due to go on strike next week, meaning yet more children and adults face having vital treatment and operations put on hold yet again. Many of the cancelled children's operations were postponed due to a shortage of NHS staff or bed space, the data reveals, a problem the government has repeatedly been warned about by health leaders. The findings will pile pressure on ministers to tackle the workforce crisis and finally resolve the pay row with junior doctors. Delaying a child's operation risks having a lifelong impact on their development. Dr. Camilla Kingdon said, and also seriously impact their mental health, with knock-on effects on their ability to socialise, to go to school and reach their full potential. The shocking scale of cancelled children's operations is a badge of shame for this Conservative government, said the Liberal Democrat leader, Sir Ed Davey. Behind these figures are countless children and parents having to wait in pain and distress. Years of neglect by this government have had led to a chronic staff shortage and a lack of hospital beds, with communities across the country paying the price. Only 77 NHS hospital trusts in England provided full data, which showed that 59,566 paediatric operations had been cancelled since 2018, meaning the true scale of the clinical disruption is likely even worse. Next week, we'll see 4 days of walkouts by junior doctors after a bank holiday weekend. Hundreds of thousands of appointments and operations could be cancelled, and a row at the Royal College of Nursing over whether to accept the government's pay deal may see nurses strike again. Of the nearly 15,000 children's operations cancelled in 2022, almost 4,000 were due to a lack of beds, a 59% rise on the previous year, according to the data. Meanwhile, 2,894 children's operations were cancelled due to a lack of staff, up 52% on the year before. Meanwhile, 446 were cancelled due to equipment problems, and 1,100 were axed due to a lack of theatre time on the day or because lists were overlooked. Long waits for individual child patients were recorded at Leicester General Hospital and at Hull University teaching hospitals, according to the data. Dr. Camilla Kingdon said the figures were very concerning. The decision to cancel operations and procedures is an extremely difficult one for paediatric teams and is devastating for young patients and their families. Parents and carers will go to great lengths to prepare their children, both physically and emotionally, for surgery. British newspaper The Telegraph has also covered this story. More than 12,000 children are enduring dangerous waits of more than a year for NHS help amid warnings that the lockdown generation is being left behind in efforts to clear NHS backlogs. Those under the age of 18 are now three times as likely as adults to face year-long waits for help from community health services, official figures have shown. Experts said the waits for children in need of speech and language therapy, assistance with motor skills and development difficulties were profoundly concerning and frankly unacceptable. Warning of a disturbing crisis exacerbated by social distancing and repeated lockdowns, they called for urgent action to prioritise the generation growing up in the shadow of the coronavirus pandemic. Dr. Camilla Kingdon, president of the Royal College of Paediatrics and Child Health, said such delays were dangerous, warning that too often they meant children missing the window of treatment with lifelong consequences. It comes as the National Health Service braces for record disruption as junior doctors embark on 4 days of industrial action straight after the Easter bank holiday weekend. The strikes are set to result in hundreds of thousands of appointments and operations being cancelled, on top of the 320,000 already lost to previous NHS walkouts. The National Health Service recently began publishing statistics tracking waiting times in community services, which are not collected in routine data about the size of acute hospital waiting lists. These show that between October and January, the total number of adults on lists had fallen by almost 8%, from 704,000 to 648,000. At the same time, the number of children facing such waits has risen by almost 4%, increasing from 206,504 to 214,028 in 4 months. While 17.5% of adults have been waiting more than 18 weeks, 36.4% of children have faced similar waits. And while 1.8% of adults have waited more than 52 weeks, this goes up to 5.9% among children. On top of this, thousands of children have seen operations cancelled. The trends come amid rising demand from a generation whose formative years and communication skills were blighted by masks, social distancing, and repeated closures of nurseries and schools, fueling developmental delays. The statistics show that over just 4 months, the number of children waiting for occupational therapy, which can help with motor skills and coordination, has risen by more than a fifth, with 22,556 facing such waits. Lists for the more general category of community paediatric services have risen by almost 8%, leaving 64,597 on such lists. Meanwhile, the number of children waiting for speech and language therapy has risen by almost 6%, with 67,774 individuals waiting. They include 2,980 children waiting at least a year for help, 4.4% of all those on such lists. Child health experts called the urgent investment in healthcare services and said children had been deprioritized during the coronavirus pandemic and continued to get a raw deal. The president of the Royal College of Paediatrics and Child Health, Dr. Camilla Kingdon, said waiting times for children continue to rise even though the adult waiting lists have shrunk. Such long waits for diagnosis, treatment or support are totally unacceptable for any patient, but can be particularly dangerous for children.
Just listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily from 1520 to 1620 UTC on the following frequencies. 25 meters, 11,645 kilohertz for the Indian subcontinent. And FM 91.5 MHz for Tehran. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on IranSat or BAT 5 and IntelSat 39 and via the internet. Our internet address is parstoday.ir/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program PO Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about audio quality and other means. Thank you.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran.
Oh Lord, here I am, pleading at your door. Send me your mercy, send me your peace, or I am lost for sure.
Hadith of the day.
Here I am, yearning for your cure. This humble servant will be diverted from you no more, no more, no more.
You're listening to the program Hadith of the Day with Dr. Shiraz Hossein Agha on IRIB English Radio.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Welcome to our program, Hadith of the Day, here at IRIB English Radio. Today on Hadith of the Day, we are going to be looking at a very beautiful and noble hadith, which has been transmitted from Imam Zainul Abidin alayhi salam regarding Imam Hassan ibn Ali ibn Abi Talib. As you know, today is the birthday of Imam Hassan alayhi salam. Here at IRIB English Radio and Hadith of the Day, we would like to offer our congratulations to our esteemed listeners on this most blessed and bounteous of days. Many virtues have been related regarding Imam Hassan alayhi salam. In this beautiful hadith, Imam Zainul Abidin alayhi salam says, "Verily, Hassan ibn Ali ibn Abi Talib was the best worshipper of his time, the most abstemious and the best of them all. Whenever he went for Hajj, he would go on foot, and sometimes even barefooted.
When he remembered death, he cried. When he remembered the grave, he cried. When he was reminded of the day of judgment and resurrection, he cried. When he was reminded of the crossing over the bridge, the Sirat, outstretched over hell, he would cry. And when he was reminded of the great exposure before Allah, exalted be his remembrance, he would gasp in such a way that he would faint. These are allusions to the way stations of the hereafter. We call these in Arabic the mawaqif of Qiyamah, the way stations. There are certain points, stages that a person must go through in his journey in the hereafter, beginning with death and then the grave, the questioning by the angels when he enters the grave, and then, you know, passing over the bridge, and all of these things are way stations that a person must pass through before he finally arrives at his final destination. Whenever the Blessed Imam was reminded of these things, he would cry and he would weep. In continuation, the Imam says, when he stood for his prayers, his limbs trembled before his Lord. When he was reminded of paradise and the fire, he was greatly disturbed as if bitten by a snake. Meaning he would tremble and shake when he was reminded of, you know, the fire of hell. And finally, the Imam says, and he would ask Allah for paradise and seek refuge in him from the fire. If heaven was mentioned, he would seek it from Allah. If the hell was mentioned and in his presence, he would seek refuge in God from that. These are some of the beautiful distinctions of Imam Hassan ibn Ali, narrated from Imam Zainul Abidin, which we recited for you on this auspicious day of the birthday of Imam Hassan alayhi salam. Thank you for joining us here on Hadith of the Day. We were looking at the virtues of Imam Hassan in the words of Imam Zainul Abidin alayhi salam. Until next time, wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
That was Dr. Shiraz Hussain Agha for the program Hadith of the Day on RIB English Radio.
Allahumma salli ala Muhammadin wa ali Muhammad. Allahumma salli ala Muhammadin wa ali Muhammad. Allahumma salli ala Muhammadin wa ali Muhammad.
This one lay.
Doing a song from Ontario, Canada.
Now back to our story.
What is it in there?
We will be talking about this.
Let me bring
event.
In Leo Sazdi. He's a professor of international.
The Spotlight.
Hello and welcome to Spotlight. I'm Marzia Hashimi. Thanks so much for being with us. Now Saudi Arabia is inviting Syria to rejoin the Arab League and to attend the next meeting, which will be held in Saudi Arabia itself. What does it all mean and why now? Stay with us on this Spotlight to find out. I'd like to welcome my guest now to the program.